Okay, welcome back. This is the juicy bit. We just love getting into the action, don't we? So everything I said is very necessary. I'm going to recap it, and you've got access to the PDF files that go with this audio series, and you can read all this good stuff as well. And right now, we're going to get into the how-tos, and I want to delineate some very, very, very useful and powerful strategies. Certain strategies that I've been using and I use on a daily basis that allow me to constantly shift back into this state of being, deepen this state of being, and keep this process going, so that my own personal experience becomes more and more and more graceful. The troubles and patterns that have been causing me sorrow and attracting negative experiences into my life over the years, they become less and less a part of my existence, and I am able to express myself in higher and higher degrees of being, and redefine myself in new ways, and continue to live life as the great adventure that it is. And so I'm not necessarily suggesting these in an order of priority. So this is like a menu, an a la carte menu that you can choose from, and you can emphasize these different things, play with these things, these strategies, methods, to, you know, however you feel most appropriate. So the first thing I'd like to talk about is the power of prayer. When you are humbling yourself, when you're opening your heart, when you're tenderizing yourself, when you move into the beauty of your own tenderness, and you actually get in touch with the love that you are, which can only happen through that tenderizing movement, and your focus burns with that certainty, that pure faith within yourself, it is the perfect place then to invite this greater power that is whole and complete, this holy presence, the power of God itself. It's very appropriate then to invite this presence into you. Okay, this is a demonstration of humility. No matter how quote unquote great we become, the more powerful, genuinely empowered we become, the more truth-filled, genuinely we are, and the more pure our hearts become and our souls become, the more humble we become. This is just a natural consequence. Anyone that you see who's all puffed up and me, 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 and I'm the man, no matter what they're capable of doing in this world, no matter how much wealth they might have amassed, and you know, their abilities, whatever they you know, can accomplish, their powers are not coming from the power of God. And this is something we need to really be aware of, is that you know, it talks in the Bible about the devil being able to raise the dead. You know, there are incredible forces and beings that, compared to ordinary human mortal levels of being, they are they're capable of miracles, miraculous expressions, miraculous phenomena. But this is all phenomena. We're moving into a non-phenomenal experience, and this organization of our psyche, this purification of oneself, one of the hallmarks of truth is this increasing humility and innocence. And so the relative position, the relativity between you as an individual, no matter how powerful you become and how effective you are in the world in terms of your results in improving and uplifting, enriching the lives of others, your relativeness to this great power that you're deriving, you're sourcing from, you become acutely aware of the difference, the energy quotient between you, and it's very humbling. And of course, that's what we want, because even Jesus, at the zenith of his expression, was still maintained this recognition of the omnipotence of this one God, this living presence, the essence and nature of life itself. And this is a good thing to be aware of. And so it's never inappropriate to pray. Never inappropriate to pray. We can always ask this great power to intercede in our lives, and we should be asking this great power to intercede in our lives. So the power of prayer for me is my favorite thing to do. And but prayer is ineffective. Anyone can pray, and lots of people do. Lots of people pray, and lots of people pray for other people. But what happens? Does anything happen? And so, the proof is always in the pudding. If you can't feel it, the effect of the prayer, basically nothing's happening. If a powerful prayer is answered instantaneously, God knows what we want before we even know it ourselves. It's answered instantaneously. And the effect of that is felt and experienced instantaneously. And if it isn't, well, it's just simply not a powerful prayer. Now, just because it's not showing up in your life immediately in a material way doesn't mean that the prayer isn't happening. It might be happening in an invisible way, and circumstances might be changing that you're going to walk into in your future, whether that future is imminent or there is a time factor involved. Sometimes there's an excruciating test of your faith when you've prayed, and then nothing appears to have happened on a physical material level, and there's like a holding pattern going on where you're being tested, your faith. Can you maintain this certainty even though there's no physical evidence to prove that? But if you really check in, that might sound like I've contradicted myself there, but I'm going to qualify that. If you really check in, when you pray, you experience the feeling. Jesus said, pray as if you've already received the thing. That means for a really effective prayer, you need to make this adjustment to your state of consciousness. So that means you need to breathe, you need to tenderize yourself, and you need to focus yourself with burning certainty. And when you put those three factors together, especially if you continue to breathe and continue to tenderize yourself and continue to focus, you will experience the blessings of the prayer instantaneously, and you'll feel the difference. You'll feel better, in other words. But you don't need this validation in order to know that your prayer is working. If you, quote unquote, good at this, you just know it's according to your faith, so shall it be. It's been said. So again, faith is the foundation, the burning nishche, with that tender love and the focusing of that burning knowingness, that burning certainty that you are what you are and that God is what God is. And life is what life is. And you put those factors together with that genuine, heart-centered, tender goodness, prayer will always, period, be answered. And this is a wonderful, 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 wonderful thing. So we can pray for intercession into our lives, and we should pray for each other, and pray for other people, and pray for the world. Pray without ceasing. Prayer is a wonderful thing, but it's this state of being where you are moving from depth, moving from that sense of connection, moving from that certainty within yourself. And just with your intention, you're praying. James Redfield, the author of The Celestine Prophecy, talks about your prayer field. We're always emanating a prayer field. And this is corroborated by the quantum scientific community that understand that we're, regardless of whether we're doing it consciously or unconsciously, we're calling forth from the universe something. We're invoking something simply through our vibrational state of being. This is the foundation of all the Abraham Hicks stuff. And it is, vibrational harmony, the law of one. And so our prayer field is defined by our intention, the power that is flowing in terms of the effectiveness of our prayer, i.e. whether our intentions are coming to fruition or not. The power is governed only by the organization of your psyche, the alchemy of your thoughts and feelings, pure and simple. So pray for and exist in a state of prayer with that intentionality and that alchemy. The epicenter of love, of compassion being the highest expression of love. The German word for compassion is Mitgefühl, with feeling. So we can be in empathetic resonance with other people when we're in a state of compassion. We can be in empathetic resonance for suffering souls, for the misery in the world, for our own suffering, when we're in a state of compassion. Forgiveness is the active component in compassion. So that means forgiveness is the active component in the highest expression of love. The Bible talks about being merciful, having mercy. That means looking, having merciful eyes, looking with mercy, having mercy flowing from your eyes. Forgiveness, compassion. So remember, it's all about being proactive. We have to do things. We have to proactively organize our mind, recalibrate our feelings, reorganize our psyche, reharmonize the alchemy of our inner world. Take appropriate actions, think appropriate thoughts. This was the Buddha's teachings in the Eightfold Path. His right livelihood, right conduct, right thought, right mindfulness, right occupation, right whatever the other ones were. It's all about using your faculties in the right way. And this is the path of righteousness, walking the path of righteousness. That means the right useness of your thoughts and words and actions and feeling states. Yeah, you use your power, which is the power of the spirit of life, and in essence is the power of God that's been given to you potentially. That spirit will come into you, that pure spirit will come into you, that whole spirit, that Holy Spirit, if you're in harmony with it. If you as a person, as a personality, are proactively recalibrating, reorganizing, controlling in a masterful way your thoughts, words and actions and feeling states in order to create harmony with the natural underlying nature of life, the spirit of life. So forgiveness is a proactive attitude. It means I have to consciously move my state into a state of forgiveness. I have to consciously shift my attitude into an attitude of forgiveness. I have to consciously organize my thoughts into thought patterns of forgiveness. It doesn't happen on its own in this world. Our personality, our ego, the projected form within the matrix is not in a state of compassion. It's not natural for it. Its natural state is a state of the ego's natural state is kind of a frightened, competitive way of being. It's a little bit on edge. It's a little stressed. It has to get this done. It has to get that done. It feels constricted by time and space in some way. It has obligations that mean it has to go over there. It has to do this. It has to do that. And it probably wants to get it done as pretty much as quickly as possible so it can go and do something else. I'm not going to go on and on and on about the negative conditioning in the world of form, but education, entertainment industry, government systems, just the very nature of life in the modern world itself, having to go to school, having to pay taxes, having to work, all of these things create stress patterns that are unnatural. They're not natural they have nothing to do with the nature of the spirit within it, the nature of the soul. The natural underlying organization of the psyche is not like this. It's not stressed in any way, shape or form, and it has no constrictions and limitations. So our natural state has been superseded by an unnatural state, and the personality, the people, the person, the ego is colored and programmed and conditioned by these unnatural states of being, these unnatural organizations, these unnatural patterns, which translate to unnatural desires and unnatural ways of being. And so the spiritual warrior has to take responsibility here for bringing himself or herself back into an underlying state of natural way of being. And that requires us to be proactive. That means we need to consciously think about doing these things, and we need to consciously hold ourselves in different patterns and hold ourselves in different feeling states and do little practices such as breathing and using our imagination in different ways in order for us to re-naturalize ourselves, to re-establish underlying patterns, to reclaim our underlying states of consciousness, to remember our natural state of being, who we truly are, to revolutionize ourselves, you see. So one of the really, really, really important tools in this is this attitude of forgiveness, which bridges into this attitude of ho'oponopono. I'm sorry, please forgive me, I love you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. I like to use that as a basic fundamental default because I witness myself, because of having so much conditioning when I was early on, and reinforcing that condition with, dysfunctional habits and patterns and whatnot. I like to use Ho'oponopono as kind of a default of mine. So whenever I'm consciously aware of it, I'll just be saying to myself over and over and over like a mantra, I'm sorry, please forgive me, I love you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. And it immediately puts me into such a beautiful state. And then from that beautiful state, I can shift into the deeper levels of being, and I can get into the blessings and really extending compassion out of myself and praying and using my intention in a really powerful way. And I become a very, very, very effective agent for change. But even now, after years and years and years and years and years of doing these things, when I forget to do it, I'll slip back into this kind of competitive, judgmental way of being, selfish, just ignoring others. And kind of like getting my stuff done and pretty much trying to get it done as quickly as possible so I can go surfing or whatever. So Ho'oponopono, I'm sorry, please forgive me, I love you, thank you, thank you, thank you. It just puts an immediate smile on your face. So I'm running through these pretty quickly. as sort of background. And then in the next audio file, I'm going to go through them very, very slowly so we can sort of meditatively experience the power of these individual components. So what we talked about so far is prayer and Ho'oponopono, the conscious application of forgiveness.